But as I think of the choices, as I think back over my life, you know, the choices that I made when I was younger have had longer-term effect than the choices I made in adult or older adult years, even though those have a lot of effect. And so when I look back to some of the decisions that I made as a youth, some of them were good. Some of them were not so good. But some of the good choices and the decisions that were made that I think bear talking about a little bit, I made the choice to follow the Lord. Regardless of the consequences, that was my decision. And that has been a guiding beacon of life from then on. I chose to identify with a church that I believe believes and practices the all things of the Word of God. I made a decision to seek for a consistent and God-fearing and God-honoring companion. And that has had a tremendous impact on my life. I made a decision to pursue a vocation which I felt would be consistent with a godly lifestyle. I made a decision. Now, I'm not saying these things to lift up myself. I'm just saying these are things that affect us. I made a decision for a more conservative expression of lifestyle than what some others have. And I made a decision who my circle of friends would be. And some of these key decisions have largely molded and shaped my life. And each of these decisions affected how I made further decisions in relation to church affairs, in relation to the family, in relation to others. You know, as I have observed many things over the years and see the result of the poor choices that some have made, too many have made, and some of the consequences of those choices are heartbreaking. And so some of these choices I made as a younger man have had an effect in relation to my own family and my own children, who they'll associate with, where they're educated and how they're occupied and how they will appear in life and so on. And so for you to say that your choices don't matter is a delusion. It's impossible. And I think this morning in a group such as this, we all want to make right choices. I'd like to invite your attention to Proverbs chapter 1. And we have here wisdom personified. Wisdom speaking. Proverbs 1, I'd like to read verse 20 to the end of the chapter. Kind of interesting to figure out, you know, what is wisdom here? I think probably it's fair to say that wisdom here is divine. It is God speaking. But the wise man here portrays it as kind of a person of her own or his own. All right, verse 20. Wisdom crieth without. She utters her voice in the streets. She crieth in the chief place of concourse, in the openings of the gates. In the city she uttereth her words, saying, How long, ye simple ones, will ye love simplicity, and the scorners delight in their scorning, and fools hate knowledge? Turn you at my reproof. Behold, I will pour out my spirit unto you. I will make known my words unto you. Because I have called, and ye refused, I have stretched out my hand, and no man regarded. But ye have said it not, all my counsel, and would none of my reproof. I also will laugh at your calamity. I will mock when your fear cometh. When your fear cometh as desolation, and your destruction cometh as a whirlwind. And when distress and anguish cometh upon you, then shall they call upon me, but I will not answer. They shall seek me early, but they shall not find me. For they that hated knowledge, and did not choose the fear of the Lord, they would none of my counsel. They despised all my reproof. Therefore shall they eat of the fruit of their own way, and be filled with their own devices. For the turning away of the simple shall slay them, and the prosperity of fools shall destroy them. But whoso hearkeneth unto me shall dwell safely, and shall be quiet from fear of evil. We have a very graphic portrayal here of wisdom speaking into my life, into your life, into the life of every person. And it depends what we do with what wisdom brings to us as to where we'll end up. And what's portrayed here is what happens to the person who neglects wisdom. And says, I want nothing to do with it. And scorns it. So, wisdom is crying out to all who will hear. And she desires that all would give heed to her counsel. And she cries to everyone, and yet there are those who turn away from her counsels. And she says that those who refuse and reject her will find themselves in a deplorable situation. And then there's nothing left that she could do to rescue them, because they had many opportunities and they spurned them. And I believe that this message is to the child, it's to the youth, it's to the adult, it's to the older people. This message of wisdom. Notice here in verses 20 and 21, it says that she cries out in the street, in the marketplace. Wisdom is not just back behind somewhere and whisper that this is really what you ought to do. But it is out in the open, crying out to all who, everywhere where people are gathered together, wherever there's the concourse of people in the streets, in the marketplaces, it says in the chief concourse, in the opening of the gates, in the city, she utters her words, her words of warning. Wherever men are, she cries to them. Out of the center of life, whatever you're doing, wherever you're going. But you know, there's two voices. And those two voices are appealing for your allegiance. One is the voice of wisdom, and the other is the voice of folly. And so, wherever we are, tomorrow, wherever you go, and you see people, and there's things going on, and there's business being done, and there's work that needs to be done at home, whatever it might be, wisdom is there, trying to get your attention. But folly is also there, trying to lead you astray. Verse 22 says, "How long, ye simple ones, will ye love simplicity?" You don't want to listen to what wisdom has to say. And you scorn. And you hate knowledge. It says fools hate knowledge. Now, I'd like to read verses 23 to 25 in the NIV version. And you can follow us along the King James. It says, "If you had responded to my rebuke, I would have poured out my heart to you and made my thoughts known to you. But since you rejected me when I called, and no one gave heed when I stretched out my hand, since you ignored all my advice and would not accept my rebuke," verse 26 says, "I will laugh at your calamity." And so the thought here is, I've poured out my spirit. I've done everything I could. I've tried to make known my words to you. I've called, but you've refused. I've stretched out my hand, but you didn't listen to me. And you've just set aside what my counsel is. You didn't want anything to do with wisdom. What's the result? The result is, I will laugh at your calamity. Now, does God have a warped sense of humor that He would laugh at this calamity? I don't think it's a heartless laugh. I don't think it's a laugh because it's funny. But it's just a reaction to realize that the abundance of folly of someone that rejects the counsel of wisdom. And so then the next verses here show that when a man is bent in his own way, he does not heed the counsel of God. And when he doesn't heed the counsel of God, God will not remove the consequences of those bad choices, but actually God will allow the seeds to go to seed, you might say. and the natural result will take its full course. I was reading this morning in a commentary I have at home. I found it interesting, and I pondered this quite a bit. It says, nothing really perishes. Deeds live on in their consequences. And so you do a deed, and you go on in life, and you say, well, probably wasn't the best, but let's forget, that's in the past. But nothing really perishes. The deeds live on in their consequences. So notice here in verse 30, it says, they would none of my counsel, they despised all my reproof, and therefore shall they eat of the fruit of their own way. That is bearing, evil deeds bears its own fruit. But you know, so does following the Beatitudes. That bears fruit. That bears the fruit of the Spirit. All right, then in verse 32, it seems that they're complacent. Turn away from the simple, for the turning away of the simple shall flay them, and the prosperity of fools shall destroy them. But on the other side, whosoever hearkeneth unto me shall dwell safely and shall be in quiet from fear of evil. You know, my heart is grieved when I see people that have followed this very route that Solomon laid out for us here. They've taken the road of rejecting counsel, taken the road of thumbing their nose at wisdom, and now they're so entwined in the results of their folly that it seems useless. And maybe they cry out to wisdom, but wisdom can't do anything about it anymore because they have so much rejected it. God called and they rejected. He stretched out his hand, but they ignored it. And so it almost seems that God just laughs at this calamity, because what can he do? The natural result of this is what they are reaping. Verse 25 says that they said it not all my counsel and would none of my reproof. And then verse 30 says they despised my reproof. And so, the thrust of the message here this morning would be that we not follow the way of the foolish that disregards the wisdom of God, but rather that we would give heed and that our choices would be made that would give heed to the wise counsel of God and His Word. All right, so I'd like to take a look at some areas where I believe that choices are made and where it does really matter in our lives and where there are consequences. We cannot just go throughout life and expect to not have results of the decisions that we make, choices we make. The first that I think of, and I believe the most important, is that of salvation. This is the most important decision that one will ever make. And do you know that every person in this world makes the choice of salvation? Now, we often say, well, you know, somebody has chosen salvation. True. But there is a choice for everyone, and that choice is either yes or no. And that choice has eternal complications or consequences. Jesus said, ye must be born again. And so, does it matter if I choose salvation or whether I live to please myself? If I choose to go after the world and its allurements, if I choose self-interest above Jesus, it will have eternal consequences. I have to think of what John the Baptist said in relation to Jesus. He said in John 3:36, he that believeth on the Son hath everlasting life, and he that believeth not the Son shall not see life, but the wrath of God abideth on him. So now, will a choice to follow Jesus or to accept that salvation, will it automatically mean that all my choices in the future will be wise? Well, no, not necessarily. But a decision to believe in Jesus is foundational to the rest of life. And another thing that I think of more and more is that my decision, your decision, in matters of salvation, if you eventually are married or have children, whatever, it's not just your salvation, but so often the salvation of your posterity rests on this decision that you make in relation to salvation. Proverbs 3, verses 5 and 6 says, "To trust in the Lord with all thine heart, lean not to thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths." And I'd like to read a verse from Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy 30, verse 19. "I call heaven and earth to record this day against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore choose life, that both thou and thy seed may live." And so here, God is telling Israel through Moses that life and death, the choice between life and death has been set before you, between blessing and cursing. Choose life, that you and your seed may live. All right, the second choice I'd like to look at is a matter of a life companion. And it's often been said, you've probably heard this said, that maybe perhaps this is the second most important choice that one ever makes in life. And we understand this is not for everyone, but it is of vital importance. And so does it matter who I would choose as a companion? Absolutely. The choice you make will affect the rest of your life and even have eternal consequences. You know, I think of young ladies who thought they were getting Mr. Right. But you know, as life went on, they found out that Mr. Right wasn't Mr. Right all the time, after all. And maybe he lost interest, and maybe he got to carousing around with his old cronies, or maybe even went after other women. Why is that? What? Did she make a wrong choice? Well, maybe. But obviously, he's making some wrong choices. I remember a young lady that was taken clear cross country from where her family was. And I'm not sure what happened. I don't think she was abused or mistreated, but her husband found more interest in his old buddies, and he would go spend time with his buddies in the evening. This poor lady that thought she had gone to where there was this young man that appreciated her and loved her, she was sitting home alone. And this is just one reason why we need to be careful in our choice. You know, there may be a young man that thought that he had was getting a godly wife, only to find out in years to come that maybe she had interests other than serving God, being faithful to her marriage vows. She may be more interested in social life or a career than making a home for her family. You know, too often these situations may end up in divorce, an adulterous relationship, a new marriage, whatever. And perhaps that young man, that young woman, may lose their eternal life because of the wrong choice they made of a companion. And so I'm just saying some of these things to help young people to think through. You know, it's a lot worse. It's a lot worse to be in a wrong relationship than in a single life. All right. Another thing that I think of in matters of choice is that of church fellowship. I've already mentioned that just a little bit. Does it matter if I go to church? Does it matter where I go to church? Does it matter if I'm plugged in? Does it matter if I just sit on the pew and not engaged? You know, maybe you can worship God if you go out by the lake in the summertime here. I'm not saying you can't worship God. But where is the influence, the direction and the guidance for your life that a stable church setting can give? So I'd like to encourage us to be full supporters of the church that you have chosen to be a part of. You know, the teaching you hear, fellowship you have, and the associations you develop have great consequences in later life for you and for your children. Here again, I guess I've seen too many casualties over the years of those that believe that church fellowship is not important. I saw that when I was a young adult, and it makes its cycles through the churches. It's just not important. We don't need to, we don't need churches. We can do it on our own. Don't want to be accountable to any church people. But you know, I believe the New Testament pattern gives structure to the church. Jesus Christ is the head and is a cornerstone. Now what is a cornerstone, therefore, unless there's a building? And what's a building, therefore, unless there's structure? And so, part of this structure is that there are under-shepherds to lead and to feed. And there are members that are a part of the building. They're likened to being a part of the building or a part of the body. And the ordinances of the church then are designed to practice them in a corporate way. In other words, we do this as a body and not just as individuals. And so I believe that the choice or choices that we make in relation to church fellowship have a tremendous impact on the consequences of our lives. And so you say it doesn't matter? Again, I would say it's a delusion if we say it doesn't matter. Another area that I'd like to mention a little bit is a matter of service. I believe that a call to follow the Lord is a call to serve in His kingdom. And you know, there's areas of service that can vary according to ability and according to age. And perhaps one's area of service is not very noticeable. But God has still called you, and it may just be a lowly place. Does it matter where or how I serve? And you know, often a Christian that comes to the Lord and wants to serve the Lord in some way is faced with a decision. What kind of service should it be? You know, should it be a foreign mission? Teaching school, maybe? Or maybe helping older and handicapped people? Maybe, you know, there's a number of other things that you could do. Teaching Bible school, coming up. Too often we want to choose a service that appeals most to me rather than seeking the will of God. Is this decision important? Or can I just put in my time somewhere for a year or two and then get on with life and not worry about service anymore? Yes, it does matter. You know, as I look at those who have gone into service in various areas, various places, friendships are formed that last a lifetime. And these friendships need to be those that will help to give direction to your life in the future, because I see interaction years later, some of these things. And so I think the place that you would choose to serve the Lord should be a place that would enhance the kingdom of God and yet preserve your personal walk with His will and His precepts. And I think it should be a place that's in harmony with your local congregation. All right, I'm going to mention just a little bit as far as choices that we make in our attire, in dress. Does it matter how I dress? You know, we're free from the law. We're living in the liberty of Jesus Christ. Yes, I think it does matter. And it affects our outlook on other areas. I'll give you a little personal example. I think I've given this before here, but maybe just to refresh your thinking. And again, just a lot of the things I know are what took place in my life, and so I'm not trying to point out that what I've done is just so great, but the impact that it had on my life. When I was growing up, and still is that way actually, in our church it was not required that brethren wear the plain suit. Neither was it required at that time for sisters to wear the cape dresses. And so when I was when I became a church member at a young age, I wasn't required to wear a plain suit like some churches are. But you know, when I was 15 years old, I decided I wanted to wear a plain suit as an expression of consistency and nonconformity. No one told me I needed to do that. And as I recall, my parents didn't necessarily even encourage it, but it was a choice that I could make. But you know, as I look back, that choice helped me in other areas of attire. And so when I go to the store and I want to buy something, a question that always, just about always comes to my mind, is this consistent with what I have chosen for attire for formal or dress occasions? If it's not, I better leave it there. And I think it's had a great impact. Is it actually something that feeds the carnal desires of the flesh? And so, it's not that these things make us better Christians. It's not they give make us better Christians, but actually helps to give a sense of direction in our wardrobes. And so, I believe for me, that choice has and continues to be make a difference in my life. And I'd like to read a verse from 1 Timothy 2:9. And this specifically mentions, in like manner also, that women adorn themselves. And I think there's about five principles of attire in this verse, and I don't think these principles, even though it's written to women, I think these principles, many of them are gender neutral. I'm going to read this verse. In like manner also that women adorn themselves in modest apparel, with shamefacedness and sobriety, not with broidered hair or gold or pearls or costly array. These five things that I see as modesty, shamefacedness, sobriety, not with broided hair, gold, or pearls, and costly array. Okay, I'd like to just think of these just a little bit. Not just for the women, but for all of us. So modesty would have the thought of not displaying the form of the body. The body should be covered, should be concealed, and it should be neat, tidy, not sloppy, but covering. Shamefacedness, and maybe this would be a little bit more directly toward the sisters, has the idea of downcast eyes and bashfulness toward men and toward God. Actually, toward men it would be modesty, and toward God it would be awe and reverence. Now, there's one other place in the New Testament where this word, this Greek word, is used. It's translated shamefacedness here. In Hebrews 12:28, it is translated reverence. In reverence and godly fear. Sobriety would have the thought of soundness of mind, self-control, moderate, discreet. A person who limits his own freedom and ability with proper thinking, demonstrating self-control with proper control on all the passions and desires. Now, I know that's quite a mouthful. But someone that has sobriety voluntarily places limitations on his freedoms. And so, clothing will follow along with that. It will be moderate and not showy. Not broided hair, gold, or pearls. I think that would have the thought of simplicity. Doing away with extras for show. Speaks of worldly fads, which come and go. Changing styles of hairdressing. Leaving off of extras for display. And then the matter of costly array needs to be economical. You know, to spend the Lord's money for that which is stylish or because of a name brand doesn't really fit with a godly lifestyle. I will say this, that the most economical garment is not necessarily always the lowest in price because of its durability and so on. So those are just a few things I see, and I think it does make a difference how we attire ourselves. I really do, and there are consequences. All right, a couple more. I better move on here. What about pleasures? What kind of gatherings and amusements can we engage in? Or should we engage in? How much pleasure seeking is appropriate for the child of God? You know, we believe that the Bible gives recreation a secondary place for the Christian, but also recognizes that there is some value. It's not a matter of whether we're going to be happy or not, but it's a matter of whether we're going to glorify God in all we do. 1 Corinthians 10:31 says, whether you eat or drink, do all to the glory of God. That's what we believe in recreation. We believe in rest and relaxation. As long as it's a diversion from the regular duties of life, but when those things become a lifestyle, then it is no longer recreation, but a way of life. And Jesus believed in the necessity of a break from the grind of life. I think we had that in our Sunday school, adult Sunday school lesson today, where he said, let's go over to the park at Bethsaida and we'll get away for a little while here. But we don't find that these type of things was a focal point in the life of Jesus and his disciples. And so we know that the world is crazed with recreation, entertainment, sports, and so on. So how much can we be involved and yet keep free from it? We know that the 1 Timothy 5:8 says that, 4:8 says, for bodily exercise profiteth little, but godliness is profitable unto all things. I like another version that says, exercise for the body is not useless, but godliness is useful in every respect. You know, true pleasure is elusive. You seek for it, you think it's in your grasp, and then it vanishes and it leaves emptiness. But there's a satisfaction in fulfilling God's purposes. Daniel Kaufman wrote this. He said, cases are rare when it's wise to seek pleasure for pleasure's sake. The highest pleasure is that which comes from a sense of having done your duty. People who search for fun invariably descend to a vulgar form of pleasure which gratifies carnal lusts rather than godly traits. Then I had to think a little bit of the matter of vocation, what we do in life, the work we do. In this land, we have many choices, many possibilities. What should it be? And I believe that we understand it's important to work. And it's going to lead into many situations that will either be an asset or a hindrance to your testimony of your Christian life. Your vocation can be an asset or it can be a detriment. And so what we work and how we work is such a gauge and indicator of our Christian life. The Bible's clear that we need to meet the needs of our own bodies, our own families, as well as the needs for those, for others. We're to reach out to others. And so in conclusion here, I would just like to ask the question again, does it really matter the choices that we make? And I would say definitely it does. Does it matter the choices I make for you? I mean, not the choices I make for your life, but the choices I make, does it affect you? And I think it does. And so I would just like to encourage us this coming week, as we go about our week, you're going to make some choices. You're going to make some choices when you walk out the door here. And some of them are inconsequential. But let's think of the consequences of the choices that we make. Are they for the moment only? Or is it something that's going to affect the remainder of my life, either for good, or is it going to be a detriment? And the question is, are you going to choose wisdom, or are you going to choose folly in the decisions that you make in the days to come? Let's have a closing number in song.